Welcome to Just a Normal Patriot Podcast, episode 25.
People should not be afraid of their governments. Governments should be afraid of their people.
Now let's set the record straight. There's no argument over the choice between peace and war. But there's only one guaranteed way you can have peace, and you can have it in the next second. Surrender. Admittedly, there's a risk in any course we follow other than this, but every lesson of history tells us that the greater risk lies in appeasement, and this is the specter our well-meaning liberal friends refuse to face, that their policy of accommodation is appeasement, and it gives no choice between peace and war, only between fight or surrender. If we continue to accommodate, continue to back and retreat, eventually we have to face the final demand, the ultimatum, and what then? When Nikita Khrushchev has told his people, he knows what our answer will be. He has told them that we're retreating under the pressure of the Cold War, and someday, when the time comes to deliver the final ultimatum, our surrender will be voluntary, because by that time, we will have been weakened from within spiritually, morally, and economically. He believes this because from our side, he's heard voices pleading for peace at any price, or better rather than death, or as one commentator put it, he'd rather live on his knees than die on his feet. And therein lies the road to war, because those voices don't speak for the rest of us. You and I know and do not believe that life is so dear and peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery. If nothing in life is worth dying for, when did this begin? Just in the face of this enemy? Or should Moses have told the children of Israel to live in slavery under the pharaohs? Should Christ have refused the cross? Should the patriots at Concord Bridge have thrown down their guns and refused to fire the shot heard around the world? The martyrs of history were not fools. And our honored dead, who gave their lives to stop the advance of the Nazis, didn't die in vain. Where then is the road to peace? Well, it's a simple answer after all. You and I have the courage to say to our enemies, there is a price we will not pay. There is a point beyond which they must not advance. Winston Churchill said the destiny of man is not measured by material computations. And great forces around the moon and the world, we learn their spirits, not animals. He said there's something going on in time and space and beyond time and space, which, whether we like it or not, spells doom. You and I have a rendezvous with destiny. We'll preserve for our children this, the last best hope of man on earth, or we'll sentence them to take the last step into 1,000 years of darkness.
It is an important sadness that has befallen the Republic, a form of instituted despotism where commonality and liberty are being irrevocably fragmented by the consolidation of governmental powers away from the people. At the center of this instituted tyranny is the administrative state, which is not at the behest of the people and is determined to influence every segment of civil life. Their constant consolidation of the aspects of a republican form of government is doing untold damage to the nation. How can a nation survive that is being ruled by bureaucrats that are not accountable to anyone and work on every level of the system to consolidate the nation for their purposes? The chief deconstruction has taken place in the judiciary, which has begun to target political enemies not fitting to the narrative of the administrative state. Far removed from any semblance of a fair and impartial justice system, there are many aspects of it taken from historical context that mimic Nazism and Stalinism. Perhaps a better metaphor exists in the present day than that of the Chinese Communist Party, as many factions of our consolidated government have begun to mimic the processes and actions of the CCP. It is of the inquisitive mind that wonders if the programmed destruction of the Union is not entirely planned and purposeful, and how the last free republic will remain if the representatives of this nation are working to unwind it. Now, the bigger supposition comes from the people of the Republic and how to educate and open their eyes to the prospects of a nation in decay. Everything taking place through the halls of government and that of society is having a detrimental effect on the prospects of the republic. Civil engagement is the hallmark of a republic, and in many instances a necessity towards the continuation of a republic. There must be open discussion on all aspects of governmental, societal, and the existing nature of all things. People that self-censure are doing themselves, and upon a larger measure, society, a great disservice. People and their base beliefs want societal acceptance so much that they would forsake their own volition to accommodate in resounding opposition for the pleasure of a general acceptance. Perhaps it is the audacity of an American that has been so easily removed from our society. There was a time, not long ago, when Americans were the most vocal and deliberate people in the world in voicing their beliefs and holding true to the moral fabric that binds the nation together. It seems, in a way, that we have been effectively programmed to not make any waves in the water, so as to not offend the mass of the narrative garbage. There's another way, perhaps far more abrasive than stems from the instituted virtue of being an American and understanding of our past, our values, and the nature of our society, that does not bow down to anyone under any pressure and will draw a line in the sand against all opposition, foreign and domestic. This audacity is the core semblance of an American, the patriot nature, that does not deliberately seek to avoid confrontation, and that the republic is worth fighting for. This is our home, our families, and certain things are worth the effort. The erosion of judicial independence, the constitutional framework for the judicial branch is well defined in the separation of enumerated powers, and its intention to act as a co-equal branch of government through history would tell us that the judicial branch is under continual attack from the other branches as well as the social structure to diminish the importance and legitimacy of the judiciary. Demonstrated attacks upon the branch and the intention for consolidation in the political ideology surrounding the branch, why the branch is imperative to constitutionality and what is necessary to preserve the integrity of the branch. It is imperative to understand the continual external pressures applied to the judiciary and how the pressure erodes judicial decisions. This is demonstrated through historical overview and political motivations and their attempts to consolidate judicial powers to the current societal and political trends of the nation. The assumptions of this reason are all based on the plain language of the U.S. Constitution, namely Article 3, Section 1. The judicial powers of the United States shall be vested in one Supreme Court and in such inferior courts as the Congress may from time to time ordain and establish. The extent of the literature on the subject is narrowed down the foundation of the attacks upon the judiciary to six specific areas: false and misleading media reports, social media attacks on the judges, recall elections triggered by unpopular rulings, overzealous ethics commission, mandatory sentencing, the rise of populist and nationalist sentiment. For the extent of narrowing down the subject matter and the causality of the erosion of the judicial branch, only the six topics are addressed. According to a survey by the National Judicial College, 90% of all judges believe that judicial independence is threatened. Research points out that there is continual degradation of the judiciary, as the hallmarks of this degradation are highlighted by the six examples above. In Federalist 78, Hamilton described the judiciary as the least dangerous of the weakest branch because it is not susceptible to external influences and only interpreting the laws that either administrative law judges or federal judges will view them as reasonable and permissible under the guise of judicial review, though the contrary seems to be the case, and that the other two branches and the ebb and flow of societal structure resent the deliberate oversight of the judiciary. An attempt to diminish this oversight can be seen in many aspects of American society. Chief Justice William Rehnquist notes the behavior the judiciary is constitutionally designed as. The Constitution tries to insulate judges from the public pressures that may affect elected officials. The Constitution protects judicial independence not to benefit judges, but to promote the rule of law. There is the appearance of a coordinated movement to diminish the integrity of the courts and to force compliance and not consolidated outcome models to rulings that fall in line with political ideology instead of rule of law. The main ideological theory that directs this line of thought is that politicians will want the court to act on their behalf to ensure the continuation of their policies and political powers. Independent courts are perceived by incumbents as a mechanism that would protect them from the oppositional attacks and future electoral changes, or ensure that legally enacted policies continue to be implemented even after they leave office. Though the case of degradation is subjective in interpretation, the fact exists that this degradation is occurring in the judiciary. The prominent theory for this erosion is the difference between the originalist point of view that the parchment content embedded in the U.S. Constitution serves as a basis for judicial formation and deliberation, and the progressive view of the living Constitution that is limited to the continual changes in the political and social environment of the nation. This is a historical analysis from the inception of judiciary to the modern day that would be representative by a detailed timeline of the critical moments of transition and destabilization of the judiciary. By gathering references of historical venues, we can gain an understanding of the transitional periods and their effect upon the nature of judiciary. Fortunately, all the research work is already done. It is just a matter of forming the bridges between governmental and societal shift and coalescing their effects upon the courts. To describe the extent of which this is happening probably would to future degradation upon the independent nature of judiciary. The express limitations of this rationale are that it does not account for the unknown variable where certain things are easily identified, such as a timeline or moments of effects. The social and ideological aspects are as unique as the expected intention of each person and are not quantifiable. For that reason, the unknown variable is to be taken into consideration, though does not diminish the validity of the findings. A survey in 2007 was taken by the U.S. State Department on Fiji amid governmental destabilization, and the result was remarkable in that they merged exactly to the diminishment of the U.S. judiciary present day, and go further to describe the specific reasons for this occurrence, naming the following key points as catalysts for degradation. Civilians who question the regime have been variously described as liars, contempt, opportunistic, power-hungry troublemakers bent on illicit disaffection. The rights to dissent and freedom of expression are circumscribed. Most dissenters have been disintegrated and harassed. The media has practiced self-censorship. Collaborators and sympathizers have been rewarded with appointments and seats in various government positions. Though this does not expressly describe the specific reason for degradation, it serves as a model for a specific catalyst and enabled degradation and a lack of public confidence. While the court has a deep reservoir of diffuse support, frequent counter-majoritarian decisions could leave it at risk. And consolidation of the branches of government. Restriction imposed upon the independent nature of judicial decisions on the oversight of ethics all serve to degrade an independent judiciary. Though checks and balances are imperative and part of a constitutional system, their effects limit the resolve of the judiciary to the extent which they may act, in part acting as a left-to-right limit upon the independence of the judiciary. The next logical course after determining the exacting effects of the degradation would be to compile a series of reversal and safeguards that restore the integrity of the courts and solidify the judiciary as a separate co-equal branch of government, prevent future encroachments, and restore public confidence. This pressure is great for judges to cater to the hot-button issues that are salient. The extent of the research requires would entail gaining a full understanding of how we got to this point based on the assumption that there's degradation in the judiciary and that the degradation is quantifiable through historical analysis of events that have impacted upon the nature of judiciary. Thirdly, that there is a benefit to the independent nature of the judiciary and the constitutionality, and these modes of operation must be protective and preserved. The proposed safeguards must ensure that the areas of focus listed upon the previous segments are fully met and functioned as a counterance towards future degradation, namely that the integrity of the judiciary and their ability to interpret law may be reserved as an independent part of the Republic. In conclusion, the constitutional framework for the expressed intention of the judiciary is vital for the continuance of the American Republic, and as such, it must be safeguarded from degradation and influence. Though historical and social analysis, we can identify the areas of influence that contribute specifically to this degradation, and the probable next steps and counteractions necessary for maintaining the integrity and independent nature of the courts. This research practice also enables continuance of trying to identify the unknown variables and isolate the specific ideological incidents that have causality upon the judiciary. A further research proposal would be necessary for the identification and integration of this theory and how it impacts the assumption and limitations listed within this. It attempts to quantify through historical analysis the methods, modes, and reasons for the degradation of the judicial independence and quantify the outcome of consolidatory governance. The degradation of the judiciary, in addition, it should be of note that specific recommendations for counterance are imperative for future studies and furtherance in this area.
Dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom!